Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're diving into cloud security today, but we're going deeper than just firewalls and encryption.
You got it. We're going to explore the legal risk and compliance side. It's like you have this CCSP certification guide chapter. Think of it as your cheat sheet for navigating this complex world.
Oh, I like that. A cheat sheet. So what are some of those legal tripwires that we should watch out for in the cloud?
Well, one of the biggest things is that laws, they don't always play nice across borders. You get a company, say in the U.S., using the cloud, storing data about their EU customers, and bam, they're hit with GDPR.
Yeah, it's not as simple as just like, you know, finding a server in a country with lax rules. You really can't escape those international regulations.
Exactly. And it's not just GDPR. I mean, you've got potential conflicts over like copyright, data privacy safeguards, who's getting notified if there's a breach.
Oh, wow.
Even import-export regulations, you know.
It's amazing how just the location of data can create so many problems.
Yeah, it really is. It reminds me of something that Craig Mundy, former Microsoft exec, once said. He said, we're trying to take this old system of rules designed for physical borders and apply it to a world where technology has basically made borders irrelevant.
Makes sense. So we've got these international legal issues. What about cloud-specific risks? What should we be aware of there?
Well, one big one is that clash between local and international laws, all because of that cross-border data storage.
Right.
So, for instance, you've got GDPR, right, in the EU, all about privacy.
Right.
But then you have the U.S. Cloud Act. That can force companies to disclose data, even if it goes against GDPR. It puts them in a tough spot.
Yeah. So they're, like, caught between a rock and a hard place.
That's putting it mildly. That's where a certified cloud security professional, a CCSP, comes in. You need to see these potential traps and help companies make sure they're, you know, doing everything right.
So it's like a legal minefield out there. Are there any guidelines or frameworks to help us navigate this?
Thankfully, yes. You know, organizations like the OECD have stepped up. They've got these 8 key principles for privacy, and they really focus on risk management and encouraging countries to work together.
So it's not just about blindly following the rules, but actually anticipating the risks and being proactive?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about building those safeguards before something goes wrong.
Okay, that makes sense. Are there other frameworks?
You bet. There's the APEC privacy framework. They've got 9 principles, and they really zoom in on preventing harm, you know, setting limits on how data can be used, putting security safeguards in place, and just making sure everyone's accountable.
So both of those frameworks, are they kind of aiming for a more standardized approach, even if the specific laws are different?
Yeah, I think that's the goal, finding some common ground in this world where data just flows so freely.
And of course, we can't forget GDPR. It's like the gold standard for data protection, right?
Yeah, it's very comprehensive. I mean, it covers who controls the data, who processes the data, has those 7 core data protection principles. And those fines, they're serious.
Okay, can we break down those principles a bit more? How can our listener make sure their business is compliant?
Sure. So imagine you're collecting data. First, you need a legitimate reason, right? Then you can only use it for the reason you stated. You should only collect what's absolutely necessary. And of course, it has to be accurate and secure.
So it's about transparency and respect for that data you're entrusted with.
Exactly. And you're accountable for making sure you're following these principles every step of the way.
Okay, I get it. Now let's talk about e-discovery in the cloud. I imagine this gets really tricky with international companies and data stored in lots of places.
Oh, it definitely does. E-discovery is basically finding and securing electronic data for legal cases. It's complex on its own, but the cloud adds another layer of complexity.
I can imagine. It seems like it would be really hard for legal teams to access the data they need when it's scattered all over the place.
Oh, it is. One of the biggest hurdles is figuring out who has jurisdiction, right? And then how do you actually access it without disrupting everything? And of course, you've got to maintain the integrity of that data for court and Campbell. You know, no tampering, no corruption during retrieval.
So what should companies consider when choosing a cloud vendor if they're worried about e-discovery?
You've got to ask those hard-hitting questions.
Like what?
Like, where's my data actually stored? What are their e-discovery capabilities? What's their legal jurisdiction? You need to know who you can call and how they handle requests for data, you know, preservation and retrieval.
So due diligence is super important. What are the different ways of handling e-discovery in the cloud?
Well, you've got SaaS-based e-discovery tools. You can rely on the provider's own services or bring in third-party experts.
And don't forget those ISO standards, you know, 27037, 27041, 27042, 27043, 27050-1. They're all super relevant for handling digital evidence.
They are. Those standards are like a playbook for making sure your evidence is admissible in court.
Great. Okay, let's talk about privacy issues in the cloud. We've touched on legal frameworks, but what are the specific concerns for privacy?
Well, one of the biggest is data often ends up, you know, globetrotting.
Right, right.
Cloud services will store data across multiple locations. It's good for availability and disaster recovery, but it raises questions about whose laws apply, you know, and whether users even know where their data is.
Yeah, that lack of transparency can definitely erode trust.
Absolutely. And then there's the difference between private data protected by contracts between parties and data that's regulated by law.
Yeah.
You know, with those penalties.
So like a company dealing with health information, they can't just put that anywhere.
Exactly. They've got HIPAA to worry about. That's where transparency is crucial. Organizations have to be upfront about how they're handling that sensitive data, and they have to be ready to notify folks if there's a breach.
Lots to think about. So how about audits in the cloud? How does that work in this ever-changing environment?
Well, audits are like your security and compliance checkup, and they're vital. But those traditional methods, you know, relying on physical access and data samples,
yeah,
they don't work so well in the cloud.
So how do you audit something that's constantly evolving?
Well, that's where those cloud-specific audit frameworks come in.
Yeah.
You've got SOC reports, SOC 1, 2, and 3. They each cover different areas.
So depending on your data, you'd need a different report, right?
Yeah.
It's like picking the right tool for the job.
Exactly. And don't forget those audit scope statements.
Oh, yeah.
Super important in the cloud.
Right.
You need clear boundaries in such a dynamic environment.
So good documentation is essential for success.
Absolutely. You have to know what you're looking at and be able to explain it clearly.
Well said. Now, how about those information security management systems, or ISMS?
Think of an ISMS as your blueprint, you know, for managing information security risks. It's the framework that keeps your data safe.
And ISO 27001, that's the big one, right?
That's the gold standard. It's an international standard, and it lays out all these controls and requirements to help you manage risk effectively.
Okay, so what are the main benefits of an ISMS, especially for companies that are already in the cloud?
Well, it goes beyond just checking boxes, right?
Right.
An ISMS helps you build a whole security-first culture within your organization. You know, it keeps your data safe, strengthens your defenses, and provides that structured approach to manage risk.
So it's like making security part of your company's DNA.
Yeah, exactly. It's that shift from being reactive to proactive.
Gotcha. So we've got the ISMS in place. What about specific policies for the cloud?
Think of policies as the ground rules for secure cloud usage. They take those high-level requirements from the ISMS and turn them into concrete actions.
So what are some must-haves?
Passwords, for starters. You got to have a rock-solid password policy, you know. Complexity expiration, no reuse, especially since all those cloud services have different default settings.
And multi-factor authentication, that's a must, right?
Oh, absolutely. Got to have that extra layer of protection.
Yeah.
You also need clear guidelines for remote access, you know, secure connections, secure devices, all of that.
And encryption policies, too. What data needs to be encrypted and who has the keys, so to speak.
All very important. And don't forget data backup and recovery. You know, how long is data kept? How often are backups done? Where's that backup data stored?
Right.
And then you've got those third-party vendors accessing your cloud environment. Lots of companies use multiple cloud services, so it gets complicated.
Yeah, it's like having a revolving door of guests.
Exactly. You need policies for vetting those third parties, controlling their access, monitoring what they're doing, the whole nine yards.
So it's all about control, visibility, even when someone else is, you know, in your digital house.
Precisely. You got to know who's doing what with your data at all times.
Mm.
Then there's separation of duties, especially for critical stuff. No one person should have too much power.
And finally, incident response. That plan everyone needs.
Absolutely. If something goes wrong, you need to know what to do. Communication, escalation, investigation, the whole damage control and recovery process.
And documentation is key, right?
Oh, yeah. Super important. You need a paper trail for accountability. Shows you're serious about risk management and security.
Now, let's zoom out and look at how cloud computing is impacting how companies manage risk in general.
Well, think about it. The cloud has flipped the traditional IT model on its head. You're basically handing the keys to your data to a third party.
So it's like trusting someone else with your valuables, but on a massive scale.
Exactly. And that requires a whole new way of thinking about risk. You have to carefully vet your cloud provider's security and make sure it aligns with your company's risk tolerance.
That's a good point. It's not one size fits all, right?
Right. Different companies will have different levels of risk they're comfortable with. A financial institution, for example, will likely be a lot more cautious than a tech startup.
So understanding your own risk profile is just as important as assessing your provider.
Absolutely. It's about finding the right balance between innovation and security. It's not easy.
Okay, so we've talked about risk assessment, the shared responsibility model, and risk appetite. What about roles and responsibilities for data?
Well, even though you're using a cloud provider, you're still the boss of your data.
So no pointing fingers if something goes wrong.
Exactly. You are the data controller, and the responsibility for complying with laws and regulations, that still lies with you.
So again, transparency is crucial. Organizations have to be upfront about how they're managing data and be ready to notify people if there's a breach.
Absolutely. Transparency builds trust. You need to show your customers and users that you're serious about protecting their data.
And with regulations always changing, what are some other things companies should consider?
Well, data breach notification is a big one. Most countries have laws requiring companies to notify both individuals and authorities if a breach occurs.
And I bet those deadlines are tight.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
But you also need to understand the specific requirements of each law, which can vary a lot.
So a good incident response plan is more important than ever.
Exactly. You need to be able to react quickly and effectively when a breach occurs.
Okay, so we've talked about risk assessment, roles, transparency. What are some strategies for actually mitigating the risks in the cloud?
Well, the most straightforward is risk avoidance. If something seems too risky, just don't use it.
So if I'm really worried about privacy, I might avoid a cloud service that doesn't have strong encryption or gives me control over where my data is stored.
Right. Sometimes the best defense is a good offense. Another strategy is to modify the risk, you know, put controls in place to lessen the impact of a security incident.
So strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, intrusion detection systems.
Exactly. It's about building layers of protection. And then there's risk sharing, getting cyber risk insurance.
Cyber risk insurance, that's like a financial safety net if things go really bad.
Exactly. It helps cover the costs if you have a data breach. And finally, there's risk retention. That's basically accepting that some risk is unavoidable and putting controls in place to manage it.
So that's more for companies that prioritize speed and innovation.
Right. They're willing to accept more risk to achieve their business goals.
So it's about weighing the pros and cons and making informed decisions based on your company's risk tolerance?
Exactly. It's a good balancing act. The goal isn't to eliminate risk entirely, but to understand and manage it.
Okay. Are there frameworks for putting these strategies into action?
Oh, for sure. ISO 31000, it's really comprehensive. And NIST, they have this great risk assessment tool specifically for cloud computing.
And NIST has some great resources too, right?
Oh yeah, they have tons of guides. For example, NIST 800-146 gives recommendations on managing risk in the cloud. And 837, it outlines a risk management framework for all sorts of information systems.
So many resources. It's a lot to keep track of.
It is. But that's why this deep dive is so helpful. It gives you a starting point.
Right. And we're not done yet. There's much more to explore in part two.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to the deep dive. Remember how we were talking about supply chain management? Well, there's a really useful standard, ISO 27036. It's all about managing those supplier relationships and, you know, the security risks that come with them.
That seems really relevant, especially with that target data breach we talked about. It really shows how vulnerable you can be because of a supplier's weak security.
Exactly. ISO 27036, it's like it gives companies a framework to assess and manage those risks, especially in the cloud.
So it's like a shield, preventing companies from becoming the next target.
That's the idea. It's all about proactively identifying and mitigating those risks, those potential problems that could be lurking in your supply chain.
Okay, let's break down ISO 27036 a bit. What are the key things our listeners should know?
Well, one of the big takeaways is that it really emphasizes understanding the security risks of different types of supplier relationships.
So it's not like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly. The level of scrutiny you need, the control, it varies depending on the relationship and how sensitive the data is.
Right. So a supplier handling really confidential information, they're going to need much more vetting than, say, someone who just delivers office supplies.
Precisely. You need the right level of rigor for each situation.
So how does ISO 27036 actually help companies manage these risks? What are the steps they can take?
Well, it gives guidance on, you know, things like defining security requirements for your suppliers, how to assess their capabilities before you even sign a contract, making sure those contracts include clear security obligations, and then, you know, monitoring how well they actually live up to those agreements.
So it covers the whole relationship, from choosing a supplier to actually managing them.
It's about building security partnerships, not just throwing contracts around. It requires open communication, working together.
So you can't just assume the suppliers will handle everything themselves.
Right. You have to work together to make sure everyone understands the security expectations.
Regular check-ins, feedback, that kind of thing.
Exactly. That's essential for a secure supply chain.
Okay, so we've got ISO 27036. Any other resources for managing those supply chain risks in the cloud?
Oh, yeah, for sure. NIST has some good ones. NIST 8276, it offers some practical guidance based on real-world cases.
Those real-world examples, they make it more tangible.
Totally. It's easier to learn from others' mistakes. Then there's NIST SP 800-161. It's more of a framework, mainly for government agencies, but still useful.
So there's a lot of guidance out there.
Yeah, a lot. The key is to find what fits your needs and your risk tolerance and then actually use it consistently.
Makes sense. Okay, let's shift gears and talk about identity and access management, or IAM.
IAM is all about controlling who has access to what in your cloud environment. Think of it as like the gatekeeper.
Yeah, in the old days, it was simpler. You had your own systems, everything was contained, the cloud, it's changed things.
Well, for sure. It's more complex now, with users accessing resources from anywhere using different devices.
Yeah, and so many companies are using multiple cloud services at the same time. That's a lot of user accounts to manage.
It's like herding cats, especially as you grow and your cloud footprint expands.
So how do you deal with these IAM challenges in the cloud?
Well, you got to start with a strong foundation, or a solid identity governance framework. That means figuring out who's responsible for managing all those identities and access rights.
So who creates new user accounts, who grants access, who reviews and revokes access when someone leaves, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You got to have those roles and responsibilities, you know, defined and written down. And your framework, it should include processes for creating new accounts and deleting them when you don't need them anymore.
So it's like having an organized system for onboarding and offboarding employees. No ghost accounts hanging around.
Exactly. Tight control over those accounts.
Okay, we've got that governance framework. What about specific controls for IAM? What are the essential tools?
One of the best is multi-factor authentication, MFA. It adds another layer of security. You have to prove your identity with more than just a password.
So it's not just your password, but also a code from your phone or a fingerprint scan or something like that.
Exactly. It's like having two locks on your door. Even if an attacker gets one key, they can't get in without the other.
Makes sense. MFA seems like a no-brainer.
It is. One of the most effective things you can do. And then there's role-based access control, RBAC.
So you're not giving everyone access to everything, but assigning permissions based on their role.
Right. Your sales team doesn't need access to financial systems, and the IT team doesn't need access to sensitive marketing data. RBAC helps with organization, reduces the risk of mistakes or, you know, intentional misuse.
So the right people get the right access at the right time.
Exactly. And then there's single sign-on, SSO. It makes things easier for users.
How so?
They log in once and they can access all their apps. No need to remember a bunch of different passwords.
That's convenient and it's probably more secure too, right? Fewer passwords to worry about.
Exactly. Win-win. Yeah. And then there's privileged access management, PM.
That's for those super user accounts, the ones with a lot of power, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
Those administrator accounts, they're prime targets for attackers. So you need that extra protection.
So PAM, it's like multi-factor authentication for those accounts, plus logging their activity, keeping an eye on what they're doing.
Exactly. You need to know what those users are up to. And finally, there's identity and access monitoring.
So you don't just set up these controls and then forget about them.
Right. You got to keep an eye on things. You're looking for any unusual logins, unauthorized access to data, changes to user accounts that don't look right.
So you're being proactive, not waiting for a breach to happen.
Exactly. You got to be able to spot and react to threats as they happen.
Okay, so we've got these best practices, but what are some of the common pitfalls companies fall into with IAM?
One of the biggest is not clearly defining those roles and responsibilities we talked about. If it's unclear who can access what, it's impossible to enforce those access controls.
It's like having a house with all the doors unlocked.
Exactly. Anyone can just walk in. Another one is just sticking with those default settings that come with the cloud services.
Oh, yeah, I've been guilty of that. Just clicking next, next, next.
But those defaults, they're often not very secure. Take the time to review them, adjust them to fit your security needs.
Worth the effort, for sure. And while we're talking about access, what about over-permissioning?
Oh, that's a big one. The principle of least privilege gives people only the access they absolutely need.
No more, no less.
Right. Giving too much access, it's like handing out a master key to your entire building.
Not good. And we can't forget passwords.
Weak passwords, they're like an open invitation for attackers. You need strong password policies, unique passwords, and encourage people to use a password manager.
The basics are still so important.
Yeah.
So, how does IAM fit into the overall cloud security picture?
Well, it's not a standalone thing. It's connected to everything else, data encryption, network security, vulnerability management.
So, I can have great encryption, but if my IAM is weak, someone could just hack a user account and get that data anyway.
Exactly. It's like having a great safe, but then leaving the key out in the open.
So, all the pieces need to work
A
together.
layered approach, that's what you want.
And IAM is a core part of
The
that.
foundation of a secure cloud, you could say.
Okay, so we've tackled IAM. Let's move on to data security and encryption.
Data security in the cloud, it's all about protecting that confidentiality, integrity, and availability of your information.
Yeah, it's a big concern for everyone with so much sensitive data up there in the cloud.
Data breaches, they can be devastating for companies, financially, their reputation, even legal problems.
So, what are the key things to think about for data security?
Encryption is your best friend. It basically makes your data unreadable to anyone who doesn't have the key to decrypt it.
So even if they get the data, they can't actually read it without the key.
Exactly. Encryption is one of those powerful tools we have, whether data is in transit or at rest.
Can you explain the difference?
Sure. Data in transit, it's data on the move, like when you upload a file or send an email. Data at rest, it's just sitting there, stored on a server or device.
Okay, I see. So both need protection, but maybe in different ways.
Right. Different methods might be used.
What are some common encryption methods used in the cloud?
For data in transit, TLS is the standard. It secures that communication channel, encrypting the data as it travels.
So that little padlock icon in your browser, that means it's using TLS.
Yep, you've got a secure connection. Now, for data at rest, there are a few options: full disk encryption, file level, database encryption.
So full disk, that's like locking the whole hard drive. File level, you're locking individual files. And database, that's specific for, well, databases.
Exactly. Pick the right lock for what you're protecting.
And the choice depends on your specific needs.
Yep. What kind of data, how sensitive it is.
Right. So encryption's key, but what else matters for data security?
Access control is huge. Make sure only authorized people can get to that data.
Which brings us back to IAM, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All those IAM controls we talked about, they're essential for data security too.
Right. And data backup and recovery, that's got to be up there too.
Oh, for sure. Got to have a plan for backing up and restoring data. Stuff happens, Hardware failures, disasters, cyber attacks.
You need to be able to bounce back quickly.
Exactly. And don't forget, those backups, they need to be encrypted too, just as valuable as the original data.
Good point. So, encryption, access control, backup, and recovery, the big three. Anything else?
Yeah, data deletion. People don't always think about it, but it's important when you don't need data anymore, make sure it's completely gone.
Especially in the cloud, with data in multiple places,
Yeah.
you got to make sure it's gone for good.
Exactly. No lingering sensitive data. Talk to your cloud provider, make sure they have secure deletion procedures.
Right. And what about data masking? I've heard about that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. It's for protecting sensitive data when you're testing or developing something.
So instead of using real customer data, you use fake data that looks real but isn't sensitive.
Exactly. You can use fake names, credit card numbers, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're protecting the real data while still working with something realistic.
Smart. Okay, so we've got all the pieces, but how do companies actually assess and manage those data security risks in the cloud? It seems overwhelming.
Well, the first step is to know what you have. Take inventory. What data do you have? Where is it? What format? Who has access?
It's like making a map of your data treasures.
Exactly. Once you have that inventory, you can start assessing the risks for each piece of data.
And the risk level, it'll depend on the type of data, how sensitive it is, and what cloud services you're using.
Right. And don't forget those laws and regulations, GDPR, CCPA, they have specific rules about data protection and encryption.
So you got to play by the rules.
Yep. It's not just about the tech, it's about the legal side too.
Okay, so we know how to assess and manage the risks. What are some best practices for keeping data safe in the cloud? Give us the top tips.
Well, we've talked about encryption, but it's so important it's worth repeating. Encrypt everything in transit and at rest.
The golden rule of data security. Strong algorithms, good key management, all of that.
Exactly. Encryption is your friend. Next, strong access controls. Make sure only the right people can get to that data and limit their permissions as much as possible.
I'll keep it locked down.
Right. Use multi-factor authentication, RBAC, PAM, all those tools we discussed.
And those data backups, they need to be rock solid, stored securely, separate from your main data, and tested regularly.
Exactly. Make sure those backups work when you need them. And data deletion, have a process for getting rid of data securely and make sure it's in line with any regulations.
No hoarding allowed.
Right. Clean house, get rid of what you don't need, and keep an eye on things. Monitor data activity, use tools that track access and alert you if anything suspicious is going on.
So it's like a security guard for your data.
Exactly.
Always be watching.
Okay, so we've got those best practices. What are some common mistakes that companies make with data security?
The biggest one, not encrypting sensitive data. It's like leaving your front door wide open.
You're just asking for trouble. You are. Another mistake is blindly trusting your cloud provider. Don't just take their word for it. Do your research. Make sure they have good security.
Right. Vet those providers carefully.
And read those security and privacy policies. Don't just skim the fine print.
Another mistake, being too generous with access permissions.
Least privilege, least privilege, least privilege. Give people only the access they absolutely need.
It's easier to restrict access from the beginning than to try to take it away later.
And of course, weak passwords.
The classic mistake.
It's a huge vulnerability. Enforce good password policies, unique passwords for every account, and encourage people to use a password manager.
Okay, so we've got the pitfalls to avoid. How does data security fit into the big picture of cloud security?
Well, it's connected to everything else. IAM, network security, vulnerability management, it all works together.
So even with great IAM, if my encryption's weak, an attacker could still get to my data.
Exactly. It's all about having a layered approach, all the pieces working together.
Data security, it's the core, protecting those valuable assets.
The crown jewels, you got to keep them safe.
Well said. Now let's move on to network security.
Network security in the cloud, it's all about protecting the data as it travels across those networks.
And cloud networks, they're complex, always changing, and a big target for attackers.
They can be, spanning multiple locations using different technologies. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge to secure them.
So what are the key things to think about when it comes to network security?
Network segmentation, it's a fundamental principle and even more important in the cloud. It's about dividing your network into smaller, isolated segments, so if one gets compromised, the damage is limited.
It's like those fire doors in a building. They stop the fire from spreading.
Exactly. Limit the damage.
So how do you do network segmentation in the cloud?
Cloud providers have tools and services that can help, things like VPCs, security groups, and ACLs.
So VPCs, those are like private networks within the cloud provider's infrastructure?
Yep. Your own little space within a bigger building.
Okay, and security groups, those are like firewalls controlling the traffic between different parts of the network.
Exactly. Deciding who gets in and who stays out.
And ACLs, they let you set very specific rules for the traffic.
It's all about layers of protection.
Okay, we've got segmentation. Now, firewalls, they're still important, right?
Oh, yeah. Firewalls are essential, but they might look a bit different in the cloud. You've got virtual firewalls, cloud data firewalls, next generation firewalls.
So many choices.
Right. Virtual firewalls, they're basically software firewalls running on virtual machines. Mm-hmm. Cloud native firewalls, they're part of the provider's platform.
Yeah.
And next-gen firewalls, they have all sorts of fancy features.
It's like picking the right security guard for your network.
Exactly. Pick the one that fits your needs.
Okay, so segmentation, firewalls, anything else we need to think about?
Intrusion detection and provision systems, or IDPS. They're super important for finding and blocking any bad stuff happening on the network.
So they're like your early warning system, scanning for problems.
Exactly. They watch the network traffic, look at log files, and try to spot patterns that suggest an attack is happening.
And they can automatically block those attacks?
Sometimes, yes. It depends on the system. It's like having a security team always on alert.
And with so many people working remotely, what about secure remote access?
That's a big challenge. You got to make sure those connections are secure.
So VPNs are important, those encrypted tunnels that protect data as it travels.
VPNs are your friend. And multi-factor authentication, is key for remote access too.
Adding that extra layer of verification.
Right. Make sure it's really the user trying to connect.
Okay, we've covered the key elements of network security. How do you actually assess and manage those risks, though? The cloud is always changing.
It is, but there are ways to stay on top of it. First, you need to understand your network.
So know what you have, where it is, how it's all connected.
Exactly. Identify all your network assets, VPCs, subnets, security groups, firewalls, the whole shebang. Then you can start looking for risks.
And the risks will vary depending on your setup, your provider, what you're doing in the cloud.
For sure. And you got to keep up with the threat landscape. Those bad guys are always coming up with new tricks.
Knowledge is power.
Right. Definitely. And don't forget to check out your cloud provider's security practices, too.
Right. They're usually pretty open about that stuff.
They are. They want you to feel good about their security.
So do your homework. Make sure the provider's practices align with your needs.
Trust but verify.
Good advice. Okay. Give us some network security best practices. What should companies be doing?
Network segmentation is number one. It's fundamental, limits the damage if something bad happens.
Use those VPCs, security groups, ACLs.
Exactly. Build those layers of protection. And make sure those firewalls are set up right.
They're your first line of defense.
They are. Block unauthorized traffic. Only allow the good stuff. And keep an eye on them.
Monitor and maintain those firewalls.
Regularly. Yeah. And don't underestimate intrusion detection and prevention systems.
Those IDPS, they're your eyes and ears.
They are. They can spot those potential threats and even block them sometimes. And secure remote access, it's critical.
VPNs, multi-factor authentication, good passwords.
All essential. Treat remote access like it's part of your main network.
Okay, so those are the good practices. Now, what are some common mistakes that companies make with network security?
The biggest one is ignoring network segmentation. It's basic security, but so many companies skip it.
It's like leaving all the doors open.
Exactly. Another common mistake, misconfiguring firewalls.
They only work if they're set up right.
Right. A bad firewall is worse than no firewall at all. Review those rules, test them, make sure they're doing what you want them to do.
Okay, and what about intrusion detection and prevention?
Don't forget about them. Without an IDPS, you're basically flying blind, much more likely to be caught off guard by an attack.
So they're essential for visibility.
They are. And another mistake, not properly securing remote access.
With so many people working from home, that's a big risk.
It is. Use VPNs, MFA, good passwords, all of that to protect those connections.
So treat remote access like it's part of your main network.
Exactly. Okay, so we've talked about mistakes to avoid. How does network security fit into the bigger picture?
Well, it's all connected, right? IAM, data security, vulnerability management.
Absolutely. It all works together. Network security, it's the foundation for a secure cloud.
It's the barrier between your data and the bad guys.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, we've covered network security. Now let's talk about virtualization and vulnerability management.
Virtualization is a core technology that makes cloud computing possible.
It's like, you know, running multiple virtual machines on one physical server, sharing resources. It's great for efficiency and scalability.
Yeah. Think of it like turning one server into an apartment building. Each apartment is a virtual machine.
I like that. So virtualization, it's great for saving money and being flexible, but it also creates some new security challenges.
That's the trade-off. More power, more complexity.
Right. So what should we think about when securing these virtualized environments?
You got to start with the hypervisor. That's the software that manages all those virtual machines.
The building manager of our virtual apartment building.
Exactly. It's important because if the hypervisor is compromised, an attacker could get control of all the virtual machines on it.
That's a scary thought. So how do we keep the hypervisor safe?
Well, first, pick a good one. A vendor with a strong reputation for security. You want a trustworthy building manager.
Makes sense. And keep it updated, right? With the latest patches.
Absolutely. Those patches are like security upgrades for your building. And access control is crucial too. Lock down access to the hypervisor. Only authorized people.
So no unauthorized visitors in the building manager's office.
Exactly. Now, what about the virtual machines themselves, those apartments?
How do we protect those?
Think of it this way. Virtual machines, they need the same security as any other server. Harden them, patch them, configure them securely.
So hardening, that's like reinforcing the doors and windows of those apartments.
Exactly. Disable anything you don't know. Close unused ports, make it tough for attackers to find a way in.
And patching, that's like installing security system upgrades.
You got it. Keep the operating system and all the software up to date with the latest patches. Don't let those vulnerabilities become weak spots. And
firewalls, intrusion detection, antivirus software, all that good stuff.
Exactly. Build layers of defense.
So the building manager is secure. The apartments are secure. What about the virtual network itself, the infrastructure that connects everything?
Think of it as the hallways and elevators of your apartment building. It's how the virtual machines talk to each other and the outside world.
And it needs to be secure, just like a physical network.
Absolutely. All those same security controls apply network segmentation, firewalls, intrusion detection.
So we're creating a secure and controlled environment for all those virtual machines.
Exactly. It's about protecting the entire ecosystem.
Okay, we've talked about securing the virtual environment. Now let's talk about vulnerabilities. What are the key things to keep in mind when managing vulnerabilities in the cloud?
Vulnerability management is all about finding and fixing weaknesses before the bad guys exploit them.
It's like regularly inspecting your house for cracks in the foundation or leaks in the roof.
Exactly. You're proactively looking for weaknesses that could be exploited.
So how do you actually go about finding those vulnerabilities in a cloud environment?
Well, vulnerability scanning is a good place to start. You use automated tools to scan your systems and applications for known vulnerabilities.
So those tools, they have a database of known vulnerabilities, and they check your systems to see if any of those vulnerabilities are present.
Exactly. It's like a security checkup for your cloud environment.
And it's important to scan regularly, right? New vulnerabilities are discovered all the time.
Absolutely. You got to stay on top of it. You can't just scan once and then forget about it. The threat landscape is constantly evolving.
Right. Those bad guys are always finding new ways to exploit weaknesses. So what happens when you find a vulnerability? What's the next step?
Well, you got to prioritize them. Not all vulnerabilities are created equal.
So some vulnerabilities are more critical than others?
Exactly. Some might be easy to exploit and could allow an attacker to gain full control of your system. Those are the ones you want to fix first.
So you need a system for assessing the severity of each vulnerability and then prioritizing them based on the level of risk they pose.
Right. You can't fix everything at once, so you got to focus on the most critical ones first.
And once you've prioritized them, what's the next step? How do you actually fix those vulnerabilities?
Well, patching is the most common solution. Software vendors release patches to fix known vulnerabilities.
So those patches, they're like computer. They fix those security holes.
Exactly. And it's crucial to apply those patches as soon as possible. Don't wait around. Delaying patch management just gives attackers more time to exploit those vulnerabilities.
Right, so it's a race against time.
It can be. And sometimes a patch isn't available right away, or it might break something else in your system. In those cases, you might need to implement a workaround.
So a workaround is a temporary fix until a proper patch is available.
Exactly. It's a way to mitigate the risk until a permanent solution is in place.
Okay, so we've got scanning, prioritization, patching, and workarounds. What else is important for managing vulnerabilities?
Configuration management is crucial. A lot of vulnerabilities arise from misconfigured systems.
So those default settings we talked about earlier, those can often be a source of vulnerabilities.
They can. You need to make sure your systems are configured securely, following industry best practices and security standards.
So it's about setting things up right from the beginning and making sure they stay that way.
Exactly. And don't forget about change management.
Oh, right. Because any changes to your systems could introduce new vulnerabilities.
That's the thing with the cloud. It's dynamic, always changing. You need a process for managing those changes and making sure they don't inadvertently weaken your security posture.
Okay, so we've talked about the key elements of vulnerability management. Now let's shift gears and talk about how vulnerability management fits into the bigger cloud security picture.
Vulnerability management, it's not a standalone thing. It's closely connected to all those other security controls we've been discussing.
So IAM, data security, network security, they all play a role.
They all do. Yeah. For example, strong access controls can help prevent attackers from exploiting vulnerabilities. And if you have strong data encryption, even if an attacker exploits a vulnerability, they might not be able to access the data.
So it's all about those layers of defense again?
Exactly. It's like having a castle with multiple walls and moats. Even if an attacker breaches one layer, there are still more layers to get through.
And vulnerability management is an ongoing process, right?
You
can't just do it once and forget about it.
Absolutely. You got to be vigilant, stay on top of those emerging threats, and keep your systems patched and secure.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground on vulnerability management. Now, What are some best practices for companies to follow? What should they be doing to stay ahead of those vulnerabilities?
Well, first and foremost, implement a vulnerability management program.
So don't just wing it. Have a structured approach.
Exactly. Define your scope, your roles and responsibilities, your processes. Make sure everyone knows what they're doing.
And automate as much as you can. Use those vulnerability scanning tools to find those weaknesses quickly.
Automation is your friend. It frees up your team to focus on the more complex stuff.
And prioritize those vulnerabilities. Not all vulnerabilities are created equal. Focus on the ones that pose the biggest risk.
Right. Don't waste time on low-risk vulnerabilities. Address those critical ones first.
And patching, patching, patching. Keep those systems up to date with the latest security patches.
It's basic hygiene, but it's so important. And don't forget about those workarounds. If a patch isn't available, implement a workaround to mitigate the risk until a permanent fix is available.
So it's a combination of proactive and reactive measures.
Exactly. You got to be ready to respond to those emerging threats.
And communication is key. Make sure everyone is on the same page, from the IT team to the executives.
Absolutely. Keep everyone informed about the risks, the mitigation efforts, and the overall security posture.
Okay, so we've got those best practices. Now, what are some... Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've covered a ton of ground, from legal stuff to data security, but we got to talk about incident response.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, you know, your emergency plan for cloud security.
Because things can go wrong, yeah. Right? No matter how much security you have.
Right. It's not a matter of if, but when. Mm-hmm. And the cloud, it's a whole different ballgame. You know, all those shared responsibilities makes incident response trickier.
So how do companies get ready for those unexpected events? Where do they even start?
First things first, you got to have a solid incident response plan.
The playbook, right?
Yep. Outlines who does what, how to communicate, how to escalate problems, the whole shebang. And those forensic investigations, got to have a process for that.
So it's like a fire drill for your cloud environment.
Exactly. Everyone knows what to do, who to call. And remember, your plan, it's got to be specific to your cloud setup.
So you're talking about how to handle data breaches, denial of service attacks, maybe even an insider threat, stuff like that.
All of that. You got to be ready for those cloud-specific scenarios. And just like a fire drill, you got to test your plan, make sure it actually works.
Practice makes perfect.
You said it. You don't want to be scrambling when a real incident hits.
Okay, we got our plan. What else should we be thinking about for incident response in the cloud? What are some things that could trip us up?
Logs, logs, logs. Super important. Cloud services generate tons of logs. They're like your evidence trail for figuring out what happened.
Yeah. But managing those logs can be a pain. They're everywhere. You know, different services, different locations. It's a needle in a haystack sometimes.
It can be. That's where a centralized system comes in. Brings all those logs together. Gives you tools to search, analyze, make sense of it all.
So it's like you're... detective kit for the cloud.
That's a good way to put it. Mm. And once you've found an incident, you need to investigate. What happened? How bad was it? How do we fix it?
But investigations in the cloud, they seem more complex than in the old days.
They can be. The evidence could be all over the place. You might not have direct control. That's the shared responsibility thing again.
Right.
You got to work with your cloud provider, maybe bring in some outside experts who know how to do investigations in the cloud.
So it's a team effort.
For sure. You need all the help you can get.
Okay, so we've got logs, forensics. What else matters for incident response?
Communication. Got to keep everyone in a loop. Your cloud provider, internal teams, maybe even law enforcement or regulators, depending on what happened.
And the public, too, sometimes, right? If it impacts customers.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah.
Got to be ready to handle media inquiries, all that.
Transparency is key, right? People want to know what happened.
Exactly. Hiding an incident just makes it worse. Honesty builds trust.
And of course, you got to stay on the right side of the law.
Absolutely. Those data breach notification laws, got to know what you're obligated to do and meet those deadlines.
It's not just about fixing the tech problem, but doing everything by the book legally.
Exactly. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground on incident response. Now, let's give everyone some best practices. How can companies be better prepared?
Give us the top tips.
That incident response plan we talked about. Number one, tailor to your cloud. Test it often.
Your roadmap for when things go wrong.
Exactly. Make sure everyone knows their role too. Who does what? Who to call? And that centralized log management system, it's a lifesaver.
It's the difference between stumbling in the dark and actually figuring out what happened.
Exactly. And having a process for those cloud forensics, working with your provider, maybe bringing in outside help.
Get the right team in place.
Right. And communication. We can't stress that enough.
Keep everyone informed. Internal teams, external partners, the public, clear and timely.
Don't let communication be a bottleneck. And last but not least, learn from every incident.
Don't just fix the problem and move on.
Right. Do a postmortem. What went wrong? Why? How do we prevent it next time?
Always be improving. Okay, now for the flip side. What are some common mistakes companies make with incident response?
Not having a plan at all. It's unbelievable how many don't.
Like sailing without a lifeboat.
Another mistake, having a plan but never testing it.
It's got to be road tested.
Right. Test it, make sure everyone knows what to do. And another mistake, not logging enough data. You need those logs to figure out what happened.
Work with your provider, make sure you're collecting the right stuff and that you can actually access it.
Make it easy on yourself. And communication, man. Bad communication just makes everything worse.
Confusion, delays.
Exactly. Have a plan for how you're going to communicate. And finally, don't let a good crisis go to waste.
Learn from it.
Every incident, it's an opportunity to make your security better, your response stronger.
Okay, so we've talked about best practices and mistakes to avoid. How does incident response tie in with all the other cloud security controls?
Well, it's your last line of defense.
Hmm.
All those other things, IAM, data security, network security, they're trying to prevent incidents in the first place.
So those are the walls and the fences and the alarms, but sometimes stuff still gets through.
Exactly. That's when your incident response plan comes in.
So it's all connected. It's all part of the same big picture.
Absolutely. It's a layered approach, a holistic approach.
Well, we've covered a ton of ground in this deep dive.
Yeah.
From legal stuff to risk management to all those technical controls.
It's been a journey.
So what are the key takeaways? What should our listeners remember as they venture into the cloud?
Choose your cloud providers carefully. Do your research, ask tough questions, make sure their security matches your needs.
Security is a shared responsibility.
You got it. You got to be actively involved in securing your own stuff.
Implement strong security. Don't cut corners. Encryption, access controls, network security, vulnerability management.
Those layers are crucial.
And have a plan, a good incident response plan. Tested and ready to go.
It's your safety net. You hope you don't need it, but it's there just in case.
Great advice. And one last thought. We've been talking about how things are today, but the cloud is always changing. Technology is always evolving.
True. It's a moving target.
So how do you think those regulations are going to change as technology advances? What about new tech, like artificial intelligence? How's that going to impact security?
That's a great question. Something for everyone to think about as they move to the cloud.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. We hope this deep dive into cloud security has been helpful. Until next time, stay safe and secure out there.